Conference record has joined the conference.
So today we're going to be talking about transparency in JSRs. When we talk about transparency, we're talking about public visibility into what's happening with your JSR, both what's happening with the expert group and how the pieces that are being developed as part of the JSR, what the progress is. So in looking at the slides, I'm going to the second slide talking about transparency. When we talk about transparency in general, we're talking about that public visibility. When we're talking about a specific JCP version, there are specific requirements. With JCP 2.7 and earlier, we have a transparency checklist. Those of you who have spent any amount of time as a spec lead, any significant amount of time as a spec lead, will be familiar with the checklist because you've had to submit it as part of your JSR submission and with each subsequent milestone that you've submitted for your JSRs. It's a series of questions that we have online and in the spec lead guide that asks, how are you being transparent? Basically, it has some set questions. So that is the requirement within the earlier versions of the JCP. With 2.8, the executive committee introduced some more stringent requirements. And a large part of my talk today will be going over those in addition to the checklist. That is, the requirements are there, but the checklist is also still required. Going to the third slide, the important document slide, there are some links here. The first link talks about JCP 2.8 and specifically sections 1.1 and the different subsections and 1.2, which largely are the ones that talk about the transparency requirements that we'll be talking about today. Then after that, there's a link to the transparency checklist. As I say, it's online. And there is a version for 2.8 JSRs and a version for 2.7 and earlier JSRs there. If you go to that link, you'll see it. Then the general link to the spec lead guide, and then part of what I'll be talking about today with regards to the 2.8 transparency requirements, I will be talking about some JSRs that are doing this already, and one of the ways that some of the JSRs that are doing this already is they've done it through creating projects on java.net. To that end, we have created some instructions on how you might do that if you want to go that route for fulfilling the transparency requirements of JCP 2.8, and that last link, the 2.8 transparency on java.net link, is our overview of how you might go about doing that. So just a note about the JSR detail page. Information provided to the community. Many JSRs have been operating in a highly transparent manner for a long time now, whether or not they were in 2.8, 2.7, or even earlier versions than that. We have on the JSR detail page a several tabbed view of the JSR. One of the tabs is the community tab. And that's something that you as spec leads can edit and are expected to keep updated with information, particularly about how the public can view what's happening with your JSR. This is a page that you can edit. This slide here, JCP 2.7 and 2.8, which is the fourth slide, talks about the steps that you take to edit what's on your community tab so that you can provide the information there. Because people will be looking there. For 2.8 JSRs, we have specific questions in the JSR proposal that provide pointers to some of the transparency requirements. And it should be fairly explicit, but since those are later sections in the proposal, that is sections 219 through 221, it can be fairly far down on the JSR page. So you're strongly encouraged to edit your own community tabs, keep them updated with whatever URLs of sites that you're using. So moving on to slide 5, I'm going to start talking about the 2.8 requirements for transparency for JSR. So one of the first and most fundamental requirements is that the expert group communications be publicly visible to the community. Now, that doesn't mean that the expert group needs to do its work on an alias with the public where they're all discussing everything with each other, although it could go that route, but it could also just be an archive that you make available that the public can review without the potential of adding noise. It may not be noise, but that is a concern for some groups. That there may be, if it's open to the public to write, that they can just bring in noise. So an alternative, there are some examples listed here of having an observer's mailing list that has the traffic of the private expert group alias copied to it. So that the public can comment on an alias, but that's not reflecting back into the expert group alias. It could be a blog with regular updates of what's happening, summary of discussions. Similarly, there can be discussion boards, wikis. These four things are specifically called out in the process document, but if you have a mechanism that isn't one of those, we'd love to hear about it so we could write about it. But also you're welcome to do it as long as the public is able to read all the substantive discussions of the expert group. So when you're providing this information to us in the program management office and through us to the public, and also when you're updating the community tab, you want to answer these two questions. How does the public view the expert group communications? And also, one of the requirements of 2.8 is that the terms of use, if there are any terms of use separate from what people are already using, say, under the jcp.org terms of use, if you're using another site or another mechanism, there are probably terms of use associated with that, and the 2.8 process document requires that you make those terms of use known up front. So you've established a mechanism for the public to view the expert group communications. Now let's move on to the next slide, slide 6. Using that mechanism, you are expected to provide details of your expert group nominations, both who it has nominated for your expert group, your substantive deliberations and discussion of those nominees, if any, and your decision on each nominee. Those are also expected to be publicly available, and the process document is explicit that it is done through this expert group communication channel that you make available to the public. Moving on to slide 7, there is a requirement that there be a publicly visible or readable archive of all working documents of the expert group. That includes meeting documents, agendas, minutes, and it also includes the working draft of the specification. So when you're providing that information, again, there are two questions that you need to provide the answer to so that the public can see it on your community tab and when you're submitting the JSR, if it's a 2.8 JSR, is one of the things that you, or these two things are what you need to provide to us so that we can put it in those sections 219, 220, and 221. How does the public access the archive of expert group working documents? And if it is a separate mechanism from the expert group communication channel that we talked about previously, what are the terms of use for it? Again, any terms of use that the public needs to agree to use these mechanisms, need to be made known upfront. Slide 8, there's a requirement that the public, in addition to being able to read all this stuff and download the documents, that the public has a mechanism to provide feedback to the expert group, both on what's happening with the JSR, but also with these other things that we've already seen, the working documents, the expert group nominations, and the expert group communications. So the public needs to be able to provide feedback. It could be that that's already covered by the previous mechanisms. If it isn't, or even if it is, it needs to be made explicit. How does the public provide feedback to you and the expert group? There's also a requirement that that feedback be publicly visible so that the public not only can view the expert group communications, but can view the feedback from the public. So there needs to be essentially an archive or an open list or something similar that the public can use to read and submit their feedback on all of these things. And again, if it is a separate mechanism than the previous ones, and it doesn't have to be, but if it is, then the terms of use for that mechanism need to also be made available, made known so that people can review them and decide whether they're comfortable with them before they start using them, and there's no surprises. Moving to slide 9, another 2.8 transparency requirement is the issue tracker. So in part, the issue tracker is sort of a spiritual successor to the change log that those of you who have gone to final release or in earlier versions of the process are quite familiar with. But in other respects, it's much more than that, because the issue tracker needs to be created and in use from the very beginning of the JSR. It needs to be publicly visible, and the public needs to be able to have issues logged in the issue tracker. So it may be that it's just for instance, a JIRA instance on java.net where the public can register and then they can log issues themselves. Or it could be that they can, it's another mechanism, but the public can view the issues and read what's in the issue tracker, but there is another mechanism that they request that an issue be logged, and then the expert group and spec lead, you can deliberate about it, which would then show up in another archive, and then either file the issue or respond that it's possibly a duplicate issue or some other reason that it's not being logged. So in providing the information about the issue tracker, you consider these questions. How does the public access the issue tracker? Right? What's the URL? What's required of them to be able to access it? How does the public get items logged into the tracker, or how do they request items to be logged, issues to be logged? And again, if it's a different mechanism than the previous ones and there are separate terms of use, what are those terms of use? Now, the final note on this slide 9, talking about the issue tracker, is just a note to spec leads, such as yourselves, that the issue tracker, part of the requirement of the issue tracker is that an issue list that summarizes the issues in the issue tracker be provided to the PMO and through them to the public and the executive committee with each milestone submission. So you're publishing an early draft review, you submit an issue list. Here are the issues that have been logged. These ones are open, these ones are resolved, these ones have been deferred, here's why. So the next slide, slide 10, I point to a couple of examples of JSRs that are doing this under JCP 2.8 already. These are the java.net URLs for those projects where they have the issue trackers, the expert group communication channel, the public feedback mechanism, and the expert group working documents archives. This is not to say that this is an exhaustive list. As I mentioned earlier, there are many JSRs that have been doing this level of transparency or something substantially similar for years. JSR 346 just recently made the transition to JCP 2.8, in large part because we were doing all of this stuff already. And so they figured, well, we're doing it. Why not be official about it and say that we're operating under 2.8 because we're doing it already? JSR 166 famously operated in a very open manner. Anyway, there are many examples, but here are two that are specifically doing it and have been from the get-go with the intent of specifically fulfilling the 2.8 requirements. So now I will thank you all for listening, and I will cease recording unless anybody has any questions they'd like to get on the record. All right, thank you very much.
Harold, I think we were going to have Martin present some of his slides before we did the question and answers.
Okay. My apologies.
Is there a WebEx? I couldn't find a WebEx.
No, I didn't start a WebEx.
Okay. Well, I did post the slides that Martin had put together on the JCP blog. Are you on the call, Martin?
I am, yes.
Okay. Thank you. So Martin was going to present some slides for spec leads on how to run a successful expert group using some open source methodologies. So I did put the slides on the JCP blog, so I apologize that you didn't have those in advance, but when I turn it over to you, and you can go through your slides, and they'll be available afterwards as well for people to take a look at those.
And let me say real quick for those of you who were following the slides before and got them off of the top page, there's a link on the top page of jcp.org to the blog. It's a little B with the lines radiating off it. So if you click that link, it'll take you right to the blog, and the first entry there is the one that Heather mentioned with the link to the slides.
Okay, I'll give everyone a few seconds to go grab those. Okay, does everybody who wants to have them? Is anybody on the call?
So I tried to follow that link from the blog to the JSR Spec Lead Tips PDF, and I get a 404.
Yeah, I was just trying to do that, too. The upload didn't work for some reason of that file, so I'm trying to replace it. Sorry about that. I just re-uploaded it, so hopefully that was successful. I'm going to try it again right now, see if it works for me. Yes, that was successful. So I don't know why the upload was unsuccessful, but it looks like it's working now. So if you refresh your browser and try it again. Actually, it worked the first time, and now it's not working for me.
I managed to get the transparency slides, but I haven't been able to successfully grab my own yet. Okay, have people managed to grab them now? I'm guessing that's a yes or a no.
I haven't been able to get them yet.
Okay. I'm actually not seeing the link to the blog. I must be blind. Is this off jcp.org or the JCP site has gathered on it?
It's on the blog, Martin, but I'm really sorry that it's not the upload's not working. I upload it, but then when I link to it, it says file not found. So for whatever reason,
okay.
The file upload is just not working right now.
That's right. I'm actually struggling to find the blog.
blogs.oracle.com/JCP. Maybe the whole thing's down. I don't know.
Oracle sites, blog. Oh, I can't even log on to Oracle.com at the moment. Something's quite broken.
Right. I think it's down right now. So why don't we go ahead and walk through your slides? And I think the most of the people that are going to be listening to this call will be listening to the recording, and we'll have the slides posted by then. So
yeah, sure.
Keep in mind. Through.
Okay.
Apologies to the folks that are on the call right now, but this will be available very shortly.
All right. So basically, I was just going to run through some tips because it probably does seem like JSR 348 is forcing an awful lot of work onto spec leads, and there is a concern that was raised, I think, earlier in the call about a lot of public noise as opposed to useful help being generated by the transparency requirements of 348. But this is a problem that all open source projects have faced, and there are some tips and tricks that people have learned over the years to use to mitigate some of these issues and to gain the best out of the public that come in and into your project, as it were. So for those who don't know me, I'm Martin Verberg. I'm one of the Java user group leaders in London, and I specialize in helping people run open source projects and that sort of thing. And I'm currently leading the Java user group Adopt the JSR program, where we're trying to get the sort of the numbers and the passion from the Java user groups to actually get involved in JSR nice and early, but also get involved in a useful way as opposed to just generating noise on mailing lists. So the first thing to realize is the benefits of actually opening up your JSR and making things open and transparent. Open source projects such as Ubuntu, for example, have found that if you make it very easy for a person to contribute to your JSR, whether that be a question on a mailing list, a bug report, downloading the reference implementation early to try it out, that every single person who does that then becomes a potential volunteer to actually help you build or manage the JSR. So it's very important to realize that every person that contacts you on the mailing list, et cetera, if you see them as a potential volunteer as opposed to creating noise, then it can sort of flip the whole situation on its head. And I think Mark Shuttleworth was quite famous for saying that after a while he no longer had to have any of the canonical support staff man the forums, et cetera, for Ubuntu because the community was doing it for themselves. Another key aspect to having things nice and open is it actually increases the chance of particular JSR being adopted in the wild and actually becoming a truly widely used standard. If the JSR isn't communicated well early on, and if there's not a diverse range of developers and end users and vendors, et cetera, that are trying your JSR early, then they're simply going to ignore it when it comes out. And that's an awful lot of wasted work on everybody's part. So some of the key things that we found over the years to get the maximum impact is, firstly, the gateway to your JSR that is either the website or the wiki or whatever your landing page is has to be really nice and easy to use and nice and friendly. So getting a user experience or a UI person to take a look and design even just this front page for you will make a huge, huge difference. People just simply generally want to know how they can download stuff, how they can get onto a mailing list, and where they can raise issues. And last but certainly not least, how they can contribute directly if in particular if they are of a developer or more technical mindset. As mentioned previously, there's a lot of canned hosting which can help you out with a lot of the requirements of JSR 348. So java.net or Google Code, GitHub, Bitbucket, they all have the issue trackers and mailing lists and those sorts of things that you can use. So it shouldn't have to be a heavy admin burden to set up infrastructure. A public mailing list or forum has already been mentioned. That's really important to utilize. And again here, instead of you yourself as a spec lead or even your EG members having to police that and answer every minor question, you can actually start to get the earlier volunteers who arrive to help you self-police that community, as it were, and to get some of those early volunteers who have a bit of knowledge about your JSR to start answering questions on your behalf, especially the types of questions that will eventually end up in a FAQ or similar. The public issue tracker, I think Jira was mentioned before. Jira is fantastic because it is simply so user-friendly. If you make it, you know, a one- or two-click step process for even a completely non-technical person to raise an issue against your project, you're going a long, long way to getting some really decent feedback. Another thing that's quite often missing, and currently the open JDK itself is suffering a little bit from this, is developer guidelines. So if you are trying to attract some volunteers to help you build your reference implementation or help you build your TCK, for example, which can be quite intensive work, you need to have instructions on how you go about doing your development, how to provide patches, and most importantly of all, how to build the software and how to run tests against it. So there's a couple of JSRs. I'll point out JSR 310, which is the new date and time for Java 8. Because they had these instructions in place, our Java user group was able to put together a team of six or seven people who have since in the past month built up about 30 to 35% of the TCK for that JSR. So all of a sudden that was a huge weight of work taken off the expert group, which is really helpful. But that could only happen because those guidelines had been put in place. Documentation, this is a key one. Nobody likes doing lots of documentation, but this is, again, a great place to get community volunteers to help out. So if you can have your documentation in a collaborative area, so a wiki of some sort, or at least somewhere where it's easy for end users and volunteers to come in and help you document a lot of the mundane things. So again, another JSR which does this very well is JSR 349, which is the Beam Validation Maintenance Release. Their documentation is pretty much all wiki-based, and more often than not, they find that, you know, even casual passers-by will come in and just tidy something up that, that they found because it's so easy for them to do so. So just some extra specifics on top of those sort of general hints. In terms of the mailing list, you are under 348 probably going to get more traffic than what you previously expected. A key thing is to try and stop rudeness from happening as early as possible. On the slide I have here for this, there'll be a link to Kathy Sarah's Creating Passionate Users paper, which is quite famous for running large technical community mailing lists. You really do get the best out of people when the trolling and the flaming, et cetera, is kept to a minimum very early on, because again, the community will just self-police itself throughout the rest of the lifespan of the project. So in the open source space, much like many JSRs, projects can fail for social reasons, not necessarily technical reasons. And having a mailing list where everyone argues over things as opposed to sort of moving together forward progressively is a sure sign of that. It's always important if you are new to running one of these sorts of projects that you will be dealing with many developers and many users who don't have English as their first language. So you have to be a little bit careful about using figures of speech that might be from your particular country, or even using certain types of shorthand might mean that you get misinterpreted, which leads you and the readers down a path which wastes everybody's time. So one of the main concerns about opening up some of these lists, again, is that you can have this vocal minority arise and sort of start to spoil things for everyone else. And again, it's a case of trying to set the tone very early in the mailing list and within the expert group itself, and encouraging the very early community members that arrive, that being a vocal, well, not a vocal minority, if they've got something important to say, but if they're just, let's say, pointlessly talking about syntax when you're trying to solve deep syntax problems, it's really helpful if early on you've encouraged the earlier community members to communicate in terms of what's useful for the JSR. In other words, to discuss semantics before you discuss syntax, for example. And again, the whole mailing list, the whole community of the mailing list will encourage newcomers to behave in that way as well. So hopefully you won't have the problem of the vocal minority wasting everyone's time. It's generally quite important. And again, you can always delegate this to a person outside of the EG to help moderate the list, is to try and avoid wasting time on long, non-technical discussions or on bike shed type problems. You can look up the bike shed on Wikipedia and it'll explain what that means, but basically people tend to argue long and hard over small things that they actually understand, whereas they tend to stay silent about you know, larger, deeper, more important issues. In terms of your project growing, the number of inexperienced users will rise very, very quickly. And this is the hardest bit to handle, usually at the start of a JSR or after you've put out a particularly good blog post or there's been some advertising done. So it's actually really important to have some of the documentation I talked about earlier prepared up front. You can save yourself days, weeks, if not months of time, if that first initial horde of people can come in and actually initially read an FAQ or immediately see the link of where to do the basic tasks, like where to download the software from, where to report bugs, those sorts of things. Otherwise, you will find your mailing list gets flooded with repeated questions, which really does buy up your time. It helps in today's sort of slightly faster-paced moving social media world that for your JSR that you do have the ability to release news, as it were, whether that's through RSS or Twitter or even a Facebook page, those sorts of things. There is a whole generation of users and developers who expect this and who are very comfortable with it. And again, you'll actually be able to reach out to a wider audience than you expect. I will quickly just mention the Adopt a JSR program in particular. So the slides will have the link to the java.net page on this. But basically, a large group of the Java user group leaders have agreed to try and utilize their Java user groups towards helping out JSRs, especially JSRs that themselves might be lacking in some resource in some area, or who feel that they're being overwhelmed by the general community and mailing list, etc. They might just need some administrative help. Please do definitely get in touch if you feel that could be a benefit. Obviously, the members of Java user groups tend to be some of the more, involved users of Java standards, so it can certainly be very helpful getting their feedback and support early on. So the next bit, and hopefully I won't take up too much more of your time, is trying to get the most out of volunteers. So a volunteer or any person who comes past your mailing list, your issue tracker, or who even anonymously downloads your reference implementation, they've usually joined because of some sort of a technical reason. That they've either found a bug or they want to have a look at your standard for a technical reason, because it's either a maintenance release on an existing standard they use, or it might be a new technology that their company might need. The key thing is to try and get them to stay. And the key thing is to try and turn that casual visitor into someone who will regularly help you update your wiki or will help you triage your issues and those sorts of things. The important thing there is to maximize the contact you have back with that user the first couple of times they arrive. So if you can always reply in full to the person who's asked a question on the mailing list or who's reported the bug, and try and find out what makes that person tick, why have they come and visited your JSR? If you can find that out, then generally speaking, you can guide them, persuade them even to help out in the JSR. A particular person might have reported a bug on a subset of your API, and going forward, that person could be very useful in answering questions about that API on the mailing list for other users, or could help triage further bugs that are coming into that area for you. Certainly don't be afraid to delegate. Spec leads and expert groups have already got more than enough to do. Hopefully with the new rules in the 348 and having everything out in the open, you will simply get more visitors and more enthusiasts coming along. And there is a whole host of tasks that you can certainly hand out to them. Some common roles, for example, are having a patch manager, someone who does the releases for you, someone who does translations for you, someone who's in charge of documentation or the FAQ, someone who does initial triaging and the issue tracking, having someone even keep the PMO up to date with the requirements that the PMO has, so the checklist and things like that. It is very necessary work, but it's also administrative work that, you could certainly delegate to another informed person in your JSR community. If you're not the sort of person who likes looking after a Twitter feed or a Facebook page, you can usually find people to do that. That is pretty much it, really. So, in short, a lot of us don't see a JSR under 3.4.8 as any different to being like any other open source project. I think over time it's been proven that most successful open source projects try to welcome in the community and have learned how to utilize that community effectively without being overwhelmed by sheer numbers or noise. So again, I'll point out that JSR 3.4.9, the Bean Validation JSR, is a very good example of this type of project in action, as is JSR 3.10 for date and time. And I know there are many other good ones out there. And that's pretty much it. If you have any questions or comments, or if you want to talk to me about Java user group involvement in your JSR, and to especially help you out with the requirements under 3.4.8, then my Twitter and my email address is on the first and last slide. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. Yes. This is Heather. I was going to say I was able to get the slides working. I double checked on a Java.net forum post, so that's in the blog too. If anyone is able to get into the blog at the moment, I know Martin, you said you weren't able to, but I was able to get back in there after I logged out and then came back in. So, and they'll be available on jcp.org later today. I'll hand it back over to you, Harold.
Okay. Well, thank you for listening. And are there any questions to us in the PMO or to Martin about what we've discussed that we want to bring up before I turn off the recording? Okay, then I will stop the recording, and if you have questions, we can take those after as well. Thank you for listening, and we'll do another call soon on another topic. Thanks.
Thanks.